The Bakari Sellers podcast tackles the most pressing current events through conversations and interviews with high-profile guests. Building upon his experience in South Carolina government and politics and his experience as a lawyer, Sellers will talk to his guests about all topics from the world of politics. Check out the Bakari Sellers podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Larry Wilmore. You are listening to Black on the Air with me, Larry Wilmore. Thanks for tuning in, you guys. Really appreciate it. Really, really fun show today. I'm talking to the great Lee Daniels, great producer and director, about his newest film called The United States versus Billie Holiday. Really, really, really cool look at this particular part of Billie Holiday's life, her career and her struggle with the FBI and with her own addictions. Had a great talk with Lee about the making of it. And man, Andra Day, let me tell you, her performance in this is, she's got to be nominated for an Oscar. Has to be. It's just amazing. I mean, she really is Billie Holiday in this. Really is amazing. So I was thinking about what I want to talk about. God, you know, I'm just exhausted. Everything out there exhausts me right now, you know. There's not one particular story that I want to focus on. And I do want to follow up on some of the stuff I said last week. But this week, the only thing I'm going to mention again is, you know, I'm still mourning the death of my brother, Mark Wilmore. Such a big loss to our family. And I share with you guys some of the issues he had been struggling with, health issues over the years and stuff. But I did want to give Mark was a writer for The Simpsons for a number of years. And I wanted to thank The Simpsons. If you guys are watching, if you listen to this before Sunday night, February 28th, there's a little tribute to my brother at the end of the show. They have a little animated version of my brother Mark. So thank you to The Simpsons. That's so nice of you guys. I mean, I'm so overwhelmed. I mean, it's just amazing, you know. And I thought I would share this little story about my brother just since I'm bringing that up, and I don't feel like talking about this other stuff. I mentioned this in the Zoom memorial. I don't think I mentioned this in the podcast, but this is just to give you an insight of who my brother was. My brother always kept it 100 before it was even a popular thing, you know. And I remember when we were kids and we saw the movie Planet of the Apes, and me being the little film critic, you know, wannabe or whatever, looking at it going, man, you know, such a cool movie, you know, that they actually came back to Earth, you know, thinking of the Statue of Liberty and all that stuff, you know. And my brother's takeaway, this is who Mark is, my brother's takeaway from the movie Planet of the Apes is that he was very upset that the dark apes, the gorillas, were the militaristic ones and the belligerent ones, whereas the light ones, you know, were the intelligent ones and the peaceful ones. My brother had a problem with that and saw the film as tremendously racist. I just thought that was really funny at the time. And that's kind of who Mark was. He saw that even as a kid, he could say that, you know, that was his takeaway. But anyhow, just a fond memory of him. And I also wanted to share this, not so much out of frustration, which I am, but kind of out of solidarity with the people who are going through deaths of loved ones right now with COVID. And it really is a tough thing. And I'll just share this with you guys just to give you kind of a window on what kind of this is like from a certain perspective. So my brother passed away on January 30th. We have plans to bury him in the same place where my nephew, who had a tragic death years ago, was buried, and my grandmother's buried there. So, you know, we want to put Mark up there as well. The first time we could get an appointment to actually make a date for the funeral was February 18th. My brother passed away January 30th. The first date we could get for a funeral was February 18th. Okay. February 18th, you know, I'm doing the plans with my sister-in-law and brother's wife. The first time we could get for a burial service was March 17th. If we wanted a funeral service, like in the chapel there, which you normally have, and a burial service at the gravesite, both of those, it would be mid-April. That's how many bodies are backed up because of COVID, that it takes a couple of months just to bury my brother. I am frustrated about this, but I'm not telling you this to tell you my frustration. I'm telling you this because that's the reality of what's happening out there, you guys. This tragic situation that we're in. This is not just my family. Many families are going through this. Naturally, all the families that are in line right now. While we're on the phone, we decided just to do a graveyard service. I can't have my brother just, you know, we can't wait around till April to bury my brother, for goodness sake, right? March 17th went away, and then the earliest we could get was March 22nd. Like we're buying concert tickets for something, right? You know, it's crazy. So March 22nd is the day that we will actually be able to bury my brother who died on January 30th. This is crazy, guys. It's, you know, I didn't know if I wanted to share this personal thing, but I thought I would, like I said, because my heart really does go out to everybody that has had to deal with this type of thing right now and who is dealing with it right now. And I want to make sure that, let me put it in another way. Let's be proactive about this. Let's make sure that as we're getting back to the functioning, you know, society, things back to normal, whatever, we got to find ways to take care of each other, to take care of ourselves, and to take care of each other, man. I'm telling you, there is some PTSD on its way. And I'm very concerned about, like, many of the kids who aren't able to be in classrooms, and they're kind of, some of their interests are dropping out. Some have had some really dark times, suicide. There's all kinds of issues coming up. Some kids are doing well, and that's good, but a lot of kids are not. And there are issues with opening up and all that stuff. My sister's a teacher. I come from a family of teachers, you know. And this is a big concern of mine also, but not just that area. I think we're all going to have to find ways proactively to take care of each other and ourselves, you guys. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about this or whatever that term is. I don't know what I said. But I want to put this in your minds right now because, and I'll do this, I'll use my platform for this. When I can, if I stumble across ways or I can find ways or whatever it is where I can help to make this happen, I will share it with you. And if you have ways you'd like to share with me, and I'm talking about positive, proactive ways to help us get back, or not even back, just help us to deal, cope, and get better, you know. I'll try to do it with making people laugh. You know, I have a lot of projects in the works right now. Thank God. Very lucky about that. Knock on wood. And hoping that you'll enjoy some of those. And, you know, entertaining is what I do. So I'm hoping to do that. But there's a lot of things we can do, whether it's community service, you know, just intervening in situations that you see are important situations to intervene in, especially with kids, taking care of our elders and that sort of thing. Which I'm quickly becoming, I think. And whatever it is, guys, 2021, I'm trying to make positive here, trying to make positive and find the ways where we can heal. That is the operative word right now, is healing, healing, healing. That's why sometimes I don't even like talking about politics and all this crap, because it's just toxic. so much of it is just toxic, you know. I'm going to try to put as much of my focus on healing, and I will keep it 100 when I have to about some of these things that I see out there, but I'm not going to focus a lot of my energy in that, but I will some of it, especially cultural issues. I'll talk about that more than the political stuff, I think. So that's what I wanted to share with you guys. A little personal today, but you know, sometimes that's what we do here on Black on the Air. That's it. I haven't forgot about some of the stuff I want to talk about, but I will do that when the time's appropriate. And in the meantime, to talk about some, you know, a person in need of healing was Billie Holiday. It was amazing how much pain that woman was in. And the gift that she gave people while she was in it is amazing, which is her music, that legacy of it. So coming up right after this, I hope you enjoy my talk with Lee Daniels about his movie, The United States versus Billie Holiday. Yeah. All right, welcome back, you guys. Very special treat. This year has been full of treats, you guys. We got another one, and I'm very excited about this gentleman. He's given us so many treats over the years, from Monsters Ball, Precious, Empire. Nobody saw that treat coming, you know, on television. But this is a very special movie that he's dropped on us right now. The United States versus Billie Holiday. Mr. Lee Daniels, welcome to Black on the Air. Lee, it's good to see you.
Thank you, my black brother. How are you, lad? What's shaking, baby?
I'm hanging in there, Lee, hanging in there. It hasn't always been easy, but, you know, everybody's going through it and try to do the best we can is what, yeah, what we're trying to do. But I'm so happy to see you. And I love the fact that you did this project. This really speaks to me on so many different levels, you know. And I just want to tell people who haven't seen it, please go see it. And I'll talk about the whole big screen aspect and all that. And this is a movie to be seen on the big screen, I believe, because this is a very stylistic, I'll say, approach to telling us this not really well-known story about Billie Holiday. Mm-hmm. And kind of what she went through at the time. And it's very lush and it's very personal at the same time, too. Mm-hmm. So congrats on that. And what drew you to this project to do this? Because it's, you know, your films are always different. You know, you're always giving something different. But this is in another lane in and of itself, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, what Billie Holiday herself has always been an interesting figure in my life, someone mm-hmm. that is just, I can't quite figure out why I love mm-hmm. her. I could never, the realness.
Yeah.
Lady Sings the Blues is the reason that I'm doing film right now. Mm-hmm. As a 13-year-old kid, I saw it. It affected me deeply.
Me too. Black. Me too.
I mean, did it? I mean, how old are you?
I'm 59.
Okay. So I'm 61.
Right.
And in that, I don't know where I saw it in the theater. You seen it in the theater?
Absolutely. It's the only place.
From?
I'm from LA. I grew up in Pomona, California. My family's from Chicago, though.
Okay, so here you go. So I'm watching that movie in the theater, and as a black teenager, it affected me to the core. Like, I wanted to do that. I wanted to be a part of the world because it was my world. I ain't never seen black people like that and dressed up in fashion and beautiful Diana, beautiful Billie Dee, and the humor of Richard Pryor, and all the beautiful black people and the streets and Harlem and you could literally smell the fried chicken popping off the screen.
Good. Yes.
Into the left. So I said, what is that? I want to do that. And I think that, you know, when I look back on my career,
kind of an origin story for you in many ways.
But that's not the real story. I think that black people needed that story. We needed to see two black people kissing for the first time on screen. We needed to see ourselves on screen. We needed to see Diana Ross go from that straightened, beautiful hair to that nappy hair when she was trying to kick it. We needed to see the real. And so if you study my work, that real exists in everything that I've done. And so I through this, I've learned that that movie was more important to me than I thought it was. Anyway, but that wasn't the real story. Susan Laurie Parks is a brilliant playwright who won a Pulitzer for Top Dog, Underdog. Mm-hmm. And she wrote this script that just was based on Johann Hari's Chasing the Scream book. Mm-hmm. And it messed me up, man. I did not understand the depth of how dogged the government was to Billie Holiday for her singing the song Strange Fruit, which we know is about, but mm-hmm. like, you know, to what to the levels of which they did to circle her with her men, her friends, the clubs, and then putting her in jail, you know. So I just for having her stopping, they didn't want her singing that song about yeah. lynching Black people. And that's one part. And the other part is really addiction. You know, I've mm-hmm. lost so many of my friends, to drugs and addiction. And I wanted to help myself too. This is the first time I've done a movie sober.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to, if I can help one person get sober, from Billy's story, and also look, have people realize that if Billy could do this shit back in the day, if she could stand up to the government, we should be doing the same thing. So sort of a double whammy for me. I've been talking a lot. You ask the questions.
No. I like it. Cause there's so much, I have so much to, just react to, just even going back to the original film, which I agree. For me, it was seeing a leading Black man, a leading Black woman, doing this story. And Billy Dee Williams was a revelation for our community during that period as well. I mean, because Diana Ross was already a star, but Billy Dee Williams was an emerging leading man, a Black man who was a leading romantic figure, you know, which was not always the case. You know, they tried it. Harry Belafonte didn't quite crack that in that mm-hmm. sense. Sidney Poitier was in his own category, but he wasn't considered a romantic lead, mm-hmm. you know, necessarily. And he was a straight up romantic lead, Billy Dee Williams. And you're right. And that was about love and so many things. And for me, as a comedian, seeing Richard Pryor, of course, in a movie was the best, you know. But mm-hmm. But what's interesting,
they didn't know what to do with him. And they didn't know. Richard was on his own trajectory. You know what I mean? I think they did know what to do with Richard. They knew that he could make a lot of money. Hollywood could make a lot of money off of Richard.
That's right.
So that was what that was. But with Billy Dee Williams, he was not, they suppressed him. That he could have, there's no reason why he shouldn't be Robert Redford. Why he shouldn't have been that. You know, they didn't quite know what to do with him. And or with Diana Ross, really, when you think about it.
Yeah. And it's funny, even the title, The United States versus Billie Holiday, that title resonates on a lot of different levels. It wasn't just about this court case, but your movie really has this this portrait of her addiction, too, which to me is also The United States versus Billie Holiday, you know, mm-hmm. and the nature of Black addiction, you know, with drugs and the complicity of the government and drugs and the Black community and all these kind of issues are kind of swirling around kind of in the background, but it still feels very present because of the way you tell this story.
Thank you, man. And it is present. And I didn't, you know, you just do it because it's in your spirit. You know, you can't figure out why so many of your relatives are in jail mm-hmm. or just trying to survive. And so many of your relatives are in jail for being addicts. Mm-hmm. Simply for being addicts. Why are we addicts? Why are we? No one wants to take a look at that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm surprised we're not all addicts, given that we have been given the way the government and the way America has treated us since the time they brought us over here. I'm surprised that mm-hmm. we're not all addicts when you really think about it. And it's time to rip the Band-Aid off and talk about this shit, Larry. It's time to be real with it. And because it's so embarrassing to talk about, you know, for my addiction, it is the hardest thing I've done, like being able to talk candidly to you, even like mm-hmm. talk about this shit. It's a painful, I'm embarrassed about it, but I'm not embarrassed about it. If that makes any sense at all.
Well, this isn't the traditional biopic, I guess you could say. To me, it feels more like a scrapbook, you know?
Okay. Yeah, all right. It was not a biopic, that's for sure.
No, it's not a biopic. And I want people to know that going in, because I feel like it gets reviewed as a biopic, but it's not that. I think some of the negative reviews I've seen have been, I think, missing the point. To me, mm-hmm. I feel like it's this loving scrapbook that gives you a sense of Billy, you know.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
And you present it with, you know, you use different cinematic techniques too, which, you know, are very interesting and very, it gives us the feeling. It's almost like a gestalt of Billie Holiday, you know, if I'm going to get technical with it. But the reason why I want to say this is that, you know, when you talk about addiction and Billie Holiday, you go into a little bit of it during a trip about her origin story, which is kind of interesting, and how she grew up. You know, she was molested at a very young age, where you don't really go into that much, you know, but that type of theme has been in your movies, you know, abuse and that sort of thing. How much of that was a part of your maybe approach to this, and maybe how you were going to take care of Billy in this movie?
Mm-hmm. It was very much, It lives in me, which is, I haven't read, of course, any of the reviews at all, but I have my people tell me snippets, just the headlines. And then I realized, how can these white people talk about my, how can you judge? Like, what the fuck? Like, you have to laugh about it. Okay, Mr. White Man or Miss White Woman. Miss gray hair white woman.
Right. Why is he so negative about the FBI? I don't understand.
I don't know why. How can you judge me with my storytelling? How can you judge me for my storytelling when you don't even, you have not walked in my shoes? Mm-hmm. You have not eaten collard greens. You have not been put in the trash can because you're gay. You don't know what it's like to be black. You don't know what it's like to be black or a black storyteller. Judge white storytellers. You know, that's what I want to say, but I'm not saying it. But I guess I am saying it because I'm telling you.
It's okay. Dish all you want. I don't care.
Get it out. It's sour fucking grapes.
It's all right.
It's not sour grapes because, but it's not sour grapes, but it's the real, you know?
No, like, you have the right to defend your vision and your work. Absolutely.
You know, it's like, how it's weird. And then they choose to herald, stories that they better understand, you know, that I think, you know, I see the lens very differently from even most black people. You know what I mean?
Sure,
I'm from
absolutely.
A very specific lens, and all of my work is pretty much the same. You know, it's from the lens that you, of which we talked about that you just mentioned. And, but anyway, I don't know why I got off on that tangent.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about abuse and how it has been a thread in some of your movies, but you take care with it. You have a certain sensibility and sensitivity to it, you know, as well. And in, you know, Billie Holiday was abusing herself with drugs, but also abusing herself with the choice of men in her life who stole from her, you know, physically abused her and that sort of thing. And it's very tricky to try to portray this person in a way where you're not overly being sympathetic or whatever, you know, you're trying to be truthful on this. What was the challenges in trying to do that? How important was Susie Laurie Park's script to doing that as well?
You cannot have, she couldn't be a victim. That was the key.
Right, right.
She could not be a victim. And she couldn't be a victim. And, but how do you do that?
Yeah.
So it's a tightrope. It's walking a tightrope.
Right.
Because, you know, one false move and you fall, you will fall. Mm-hmm. We went back and do additional footage, shooting rather, where I saw her crying. You know, I said, I have to see Billy cry. I know she's tough. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want her to cry at all. So I went back to do some reshooting and I created the character of Reginald Lord Devine. And he's the white guy that interviews her in the beginning of the film. We come back to him. Why don't you stop singing the song? Why don't you stop? Mm-hmm. And then she says, why don't you stop? And so she starts crying. She says, because I don't know how to stop. It's in my soul. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know that if, you know, like if the government came after me and told me, Lee, stop making movies, I would lose my mind. I don't know that I could have, until this movie, Larry, I don't know that I would have, I probably would have said, okay, you know, they're going to come up to my family, come up to my kids, stop me at all if you don't stop telling a certain type of story. You know, this movie has changed my mind about, like, you know, the courage that I have in telling stories.
Yeah, the courage that, you know, people had to have at certain times. I mean, and the irony that, you know, they don't want her to sing a song about lynching as opposed to, how about just stopping lynching? How about that? You know, how about, we don't want to hear about it. How about we just stop it? How about that? You know, how long did the, now part of the story is that the FBI in the way that they do, was, I'll use the term investigating Billie Holiday. How long did that go on? This connection with the FBI and Billie Holiday?
15 years.
About 15 years.
Until 15 years from the time she began that song until the time that she died.
Yeah. And, you know, strange. Well, I'll come back to Strange Fruit, but I want to talk about this too, is you seem to have talent for turning people who we didn't think of actors into these ridiculous performances. You know, Mariah Carey, you did, even Monique, you know, she was a comedian, gives us performance, but Andrew Day is a revelation as Billie Holiday. Tell me about the beginnings of that, because I heard that you weren't quite sure, or she wasn't quite sure when you first started.
We both weren't quite sure. I had a couple of great actors that I was excited about. And everybody kept telling me to see her. My friend Simone was telling me to see her. Her agents were calling me to see her. My sister wanted me to see her. And I don't like being told what to do. I knew that I had the actors that I wanted. And I had a good choice of somebody that, a couple people that had done the job. And when I saw her, I met her, I could tell that she really not was just nervous about meeting me, but that she really was nervous about Billie. She was a Billie Holiday connoisseur. Yeah. And that she really wanted to do Billie Holiday right. And that she questioned herself even. And I found myself in the middle of the lunch talking her into auditioning. And I said, how does this happen? You know, so, she's talking to somebody about the job. I'm talking her into the job. And then she auditioned it. It was like, it was, I knew that with direction that she would, I knew that we were the perfect match. There was no way that we couldn't, that was God talking. It was God talking. We were on, that we both understood Billie in a primal way. And that I took her to a great acting coach and to a great vocal coach. And also, you know, it was also, you know, my understanding, I was sober in, which is really interesting, you know, my first time ever being sober.
Did it feel different when you were on the set doing it? Were you a bit insecure about it? Because I know a lot of like performers who feel like, man, I do so well when I'm not sober. What's it going to be like when I am? You know, can I do the same thing?
I was naked, bro. It felt really raw. And I felt raw. And, you know, and it was therapeutic. And it was like being in a therapy session. I can't explain it. It was a, she and I became one, and it was, I had the time of my life, and it, it made me know that, you know, that I can do other, I will be able to work successfully sober.
Right. Now, did you, what was your approach to the film? Did you do the musical stuff first, or did you tackle tough things first? Because when you're dealing with a novice actor, you know, are you trying to warm them into it, you know, by doing that type of thing? So what was your approach?
She gets the job. We go off and do, you know, a couple months before shooting while we're prepping in Montreal. She's in Miami and I'm flying back and forth from Miami to Montreal.
And this is all pre-COVID, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. Way pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. 2 years before COVID, a year and a half before COVID.
Oh, wow.
We are... She is singing the songs and I'm giving her direction on the songs and her singing, her performing. And then we start, we go into production and then we are finding our story as we're shooting and the tone. And I'm really even finding it. I'm finding things I didn't even know about the story. And she's becoming, because of me, of our discovery together of Billie's journey, each scene now takes on a different meaning and different understanding for both of us. And so now, you know, the pre-records, when you pre-record something, it's her voice, but you lip sync it in when we're shooting it.
So for and, matching purposes and all that kind of stuff.
Just, only,
Just so people know how it works.
And it saves an enormous amount of money and time and everything. But, and producers don't like to do anything live because, you know, anything, and most likely it does go wrong live. Once we got on the ground and we started like playing, it was clear that the lynching scene became something else and she needed to sing it a different way. And so she had to sing that live. And then after she was beaten by her man, right before Lover Man, that we had to sing that live because it just didn't match. You know, she experienced it in real time. You know what I mean? and Lady Sings the Blues. All those songs took on a different meaning after we had shot the scenes.
Wow.
So it was but not that they're not bad. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about doing when the release of the album released it.
Yeah,
but
two different about, like, soundtracks.
Yeah, because
that's
they
great.
Really are brilliant. But you see both are brilliant. But you see that you're in them when you're in it. It's a whole different thing, man. It's a whole different beast, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. What we thought worked would have been saccharine. Mm-hmm.
Was it something she was aware of also, or this was your observation?
I don't know what her I mean, I think so. I mean, she just followed my lead. So it was, okay. She was so
she
great.
She trusted
I mean,
you know, on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause there had to have been a lot of trust, because some of the raw sex scenes and just the way that she laid herself bare in so many ways, must have been a challenge, for her. Well, were those a challenge, filming as well, or did it have the same type of effortless feel to it?
She made it effortless, and he made it effortless because they, Larry, I was the nervous one. I just didn't want to read the headlines. Lee Daniels is taking advantage of this girl, and I wanted to cut the scenes, and I just wanted to wanted to dilute it because I just didn't want to take advantage of her. I just didn't want, but she was a.
What do you mean take advantage of her?
I still want to think that we were just using, what's the word, Larry, when you just have exploitive sex, exploitative sex.
Sure.
But there was a reason behind the sex, because she grew up in a brothel. She was a prostitute. You know, she was raped. It's like, you know, the sex is significant. That was her love, because she didn't know how to love anything else. Mm-hmm. And so that was important. But I didn't want to, I felt very protective of both of them. Mm-hmm. And they knew that. And so they really, I think that made them really, it made them, they knew that that was the only time I was really anxious. And I was nervous for my cinematographer, who's worked with me on Empire and Butler and Precious. And he was right up in the bed with them.
Yeah.
So it was an uncomfortable situation, and they saw how uncomfortable I was, and they wanted me. Ironically, I think it worked so well because we were a family, and they wanted to take care of me. It was the one time I didn't know really quite how to. I got the because I really was protecting them. They're actors, and they're bearing their souls literally for me, you know.
But and also, you know, to give you credit too, is you the. The way you deal with love is you're not afraid to have pain in there. It's in all of your work, you know.
Is it?
Absolutely, you know.
Oh, wow, okay. I mean, don't really...
Monsters Ball is all about that. It's all about
the,
you know, pain and love, right? I mean, Halle Berry's anguish throughout the entire thing. You know? I think it goes through much of your work, you know, that there's this... And by... I don't know if pain is the right word... But there is a...
Pain is a good word, though, bro.
Yeah.
Because,
it's a raw word. To use your word, raw. Mm-hmm. There's something raw about pain. And to see... Because, and once again, to Billy was in a lot of different types of pain, you know, because anyone that is a drug addict, as you know, there's a pain that can't be addressed by these things that they have around them. It's deeper than that, you know. It's even the singing only lasts for a little bit, you know. Like, what's going to solve the pain, the heroin or the singing? Which one's gonna work? It's not the lovemaking. That's not going to do it, you know. If anything, it's these things that make the person feel normal to them, you know. And what's normal to them, unfortunately, has a lot of pain associated with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting part of Billy's story. You know, which the other part of it is Black life during that time. And here's what I also appreciate about the movie. And a lot of people should know that, like, and this is something being in showbiz that maybe you can relate to and I can too. Like, there's a part of showbiz that's really hard, you know. And being a Black musician during that time, like, you had hard niggas, you know, in that type of life, you know. Like, people with straight razors who would cut you for, like, reasons. You know what I mean? Like, and seeing, like, raw niggas on screen. Like that, the last husband, like, that's a raw nigga, you know, and that type of stuff. Like, I appreciate those types of characters. You're not trying to gloss them over. Like, say, no, there's some raw shit that happened back then. You know, there's a mix of these types of characters.
Thank you so much for that, man. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. I think Rob Morgan is probably one of the best actors alive right now.
Yeah.
And he is just so exquisite. I can't wait to work with him over because he got the rawness. He knew that nigga would have split. And he knew there's so much that I literally, the studio, I had to, you thought this version was, wait till you see my director's cut, Larry. I had to tame it way down.
Wow.
Because there's a scene where he beats her. And I just said, okay, she was beaten once. I don't know whether she, you know, but this is really, other than the mother, Jimmy's mother in this story, all this shit is real. Like, this ain't no make-believe. All of it is documented. All of it is, her interviews are up, and this is all on the internet, people. So, you know, Jimmy's mother, I couldn't find any information about her, about his family, about his life. So I made
Jimmy, Jimmy's the FBI person in the film, for those of you who haven't seen it.
But but Louis McCabe, that's Billy Dee Williams, Joe. Louis McCabe was an advisor on Lady Sings the Blues. So he thought he was going to get off like Billy Dee Williams, but we know we got the receipts.
Wow.
You know, and he was that nigga. And I wanted to show that nigga, you know?
Right. Yeah. Unapologetic. The other thing is LGBTQ has a certain revisionist feel, but you give it an authentic feel. Like, it can have a revisionist feel when people go back and look certain times in history. But
what does revisionist mean? What does revisionist mean?
It means it's viewed through the eyes, through a contemporary lens, you know, primarily, of what people would wish relationships to be, you know?
Okay.
But I appreciate that. I felt like I could have been dropped in 1947, whatever it is, when I look at those characters.
Thank you, man.
And I see how you portray them. That's what I mean by the how you're keeping it 100 in that sense, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's
people
also
think that people think that, like, you know, I think somebody said, "Oh, they didn't talk like that," or something. I forget Tyler Perry, who I loved it, but he had one note. It was like, they didn't talk like that. I was like, they did, and they did, and some of the dialogue has just trickled down to our world and to our dialect today and dialogue today. So,
Well, what it is, people think gay people started existing in the 70s, you know, that they didn't exist before then, but sorry, they did. Yeah. But the relationship to a gay person was just different in society. Mm-hmm. It wasn't talked about in the same way, but it's not like it was ignored. Like, people didn't acknowledge that, you know, someone was in a lane, or that they didn't express them. They expressed themselves a certain way, but it was just different, you know, but it wasn't, it was a different type of invisibility, I'll say, you know.
Truly. And I don't think that we, you know, when you really study Miss Freddie's character, I don't know of a black gender fluid character that has been given that much care on screen. When she opens and we see her with her balding, you know, balding hairline around her, which shows time jumping and the weight gain. And then we cut back to in time where we see him with different wigs on and the humor and the pain and what it was like to sort of be in that world and gender fluid at that time. Ain't nobody doing that. Ain't nobody doing that. We don't see that for black people at all. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so important to give life to people that I know. Like, I know Miss Freddie. You know, Miss Freddie, I know Miss Freddie. You know, I just like, why are we embarrassed about showing that man or that woman, whoever he wants to be called?
Right. And there's also that component for Billie Holiday's life, which I really didn't know about, but it completely makes sense. The whole side story that you don't go into too much detail with Tallulah Bankhead at the time.
Yeah. I wanted to do, but I couldn't, you know, it was so much.
Which is a whole movie by itself, by the way.
I know, man. I wanted to tell that story, and I couldn't tell the story because I just had to focus on the government. Because it wasn't a biopic. And I had to focus on the government tracking her. And really the double entendre of the government being that love affair, Jimmy, that love affair with Jimmy and she, which wasn't really an equal love affair, because I don't think Billy knew how to really love. And but Jimmy loved her. Well, another powerful moment in the film for me is Jimmy tells Billy, I love you, Billie Holiday. Mm-hmm. And she tries to take that in, and she turns back with, my liver don't work no more. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know how to take love in any way. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, you know, I understand, mm-hmm, when you're so broken, you don't even know what love is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting that the film feels particularly relevant now, especially after this last year that we had. You started working on it 4 or 5 years ago, and now with the release of it, you know, with the protests we've had over this last year and the more revelations that come out about the FBI's complicity in Black terror, I'll say, my words, you know.
I love that word, though.
You know,
you ain't got to explain to me what that word is.
Yeah.
That's pretty simple.
But it gives it such an added relevance right now, too. With those types of things, I'm sure that's something you didn't count on at the time. But does it feel that way to you as well? Or
it does. It really does. It is hard for me to. Yesterday was the release of the film, mm-hmm, and it was really releasing it into. That's why I really hate. I mean, I told people I don't want to know what the critics are saying. I mean, I didn't want to read. I don't read reviews, but you know, I say I need a heads up, so I'm walk. I know what the hell I'm. You know, I. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard for me to leave my baby, because I call it the baby. Every film that I have is a child. Right. It's so much work and love and nature. You know, it's 4 years of, even maybe a couple more years before that, of really trying to figure out what it is that I'm giving birth to. And to see it not on the big screen even, you know, because that's how I shot it on film, and it should be on film. One of maybe four movies that were shot last year on film.
What was your decision to shoot it on film?
Because every movie I have has been shot on film. Like, mm-hmm, I don't know how to not shoot a movie on film. I've never shot digitally at all. And so, but I'm the last of a dying breed.
Yeah. Larry,
you know,
it's Scorsese, I think.
But I would have saved $400,000. I would have saved $400,000 if I had shot it.
It looks great, though.
Thank you. But anyway, to release it streaming, mm-hmm, to release it streaming, and to release it to the hounds, to take a shit all over it every now and then, it disturbs me deeply. Mm. It disturbs me. It disturbs me because Billy's legacy is, and the story that we are trying to get out is that the government, these white motherfuckers, got to her, and even now they're trying to get to her. No. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you and the boat that you came in on.
Yeah. Do you think we'll ever have a reckoning for some of the shit the FBI has done? I mean, you know, we had the documentary recently about MLK and the FBI, you know. In fact, mm-hmm, there was the other United States versus John Lennon, you know, which is battle with the government and everything, you know. Another music star being accosted for a lot of different reasons, but mm-hmm, you know, the government always thinking that, you know, these people
know best.
Yes, are gonna give everybody the truth. And there's some trouble brewing.
We are in a democracy, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. We live in a democracy. Okay. Yeah. If that's what you think. No, I don't think so. I don't think, mm-hmm, so. Not as we in this democratic place that we're in. But then we get into dangerous zone about, well, what defines democracy? Mm-hmm. It's so gray, Larry. Life is gray.
It is. It is.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
And Strange Fruit was originally written by a teacher, was it?
Maripol. No, Maripol wrote it, who was Jewish. Uh-huh. And nobody was singing a song. Nobody was. He was trying to get somebody black to sing the song. Nobody was singing the song. Uh-huh. And Billy was like, "Yeah, I'll sing it for you, baby." And then I read somewhere that she was telling people that she sort of co-wrote the song. And I don't know how true that was, but I just
she probably added one little line here or there.
Yeah,
it's interesting because she had it in her repertoire for about 20 years. It was a long time.
Mm-hmm. You've done your Billie Holiday work, man.
Well, you know, got to do some of it, you know.
Yeah, you've done your Billie Holiday homework.
Well, here's an interesting tidbit about Billie, because God Bless the Child, which arguably, you know, besides Strange Fruit, is probably her most enduring, you know, if not more famous ones, you know, which, you know, you're not sure if it's in the gospel lane or where it is exactly, was actually a song about her mother, which I didn't know. Do you know the origins of that song?
I do know the origins of that. Yeah. That's what she says.
That's what she says, right?
Yeah, for some reason, I don't quite believe it, though. I don't know why I should say that about my beloved Billie Holiday.
I'll say it, because it's a great story. I'll just give it a little bit of it. So,
yeah, I don't know whether I believe it. Do you believe it? Because she used to say shit just to be saying shit.
I completely believe it.
She used to say shit just to be saying shit, though.
I understand. But here's...
she'd have another story for it. If she has some gin in her, then it'd be another story. Okay? Yes.
I don't disagree. But here's the thing that is back there, too. There's some petty motherfuckers back there, too, man. You know, especially... Yes. It was petty motherfuckers all the time, you know. But if that song is about pettiness, that is hilarious, you know.
Tell him, because I ain't gonna see it.
Okay, so apparently, you know, Billie Holiday famously had a really difficulty with managing money, primarily because of her drug addiction. Heroin was not cheap, you know. But, you know, like anybody that makes it, money goes to their family members as well. And she had a very difficult relationship with her mother, which you touched on a little bit. And her mother, I think, opened a restaurant or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that.
Yeah, a restaurant in Harlem.
Yes, a restaurant in Harlem with Billie's money. Billie financing it.
Yes.
You know. She was Paul Sorvino in Goodfellas, you know. And Billie needed some money and went to her mama, you know, who told her she should be a prostitute when she was a young girl, that she needed some money. The mama told her to go fuck off. I ain't giving you any money. And Billie said, this bitch, you know, it's a God bless the child that has his own, has his own money, you know, that she got to go begging to somebody for it. I think that's it. From her point of view, that song came out of just being mad at her mother over not giving her any money.
And I guess I believe it today.
Yeah.
Catch Me Tomorrow, I don't. It just depends on the day. Because Billy was sometimey, you know? She was sometimey. Yeah. And that was the beauty of Billy, you know? She was messy.
She was messy.
I made a messy film to honor a messy individual.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I love that.
That was what I was trying to do. You know, that's what I'm trying to do and trying to tell. That's what addiction is. It's messy. It's complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is the thing ultimately that you think was going to resonate the most? To me, I have to be honest with you, it might be the addiction part, you know? Mm-hmm. Because even though
over the government,
I think so.
Why so, Larry?
Well, because there's something, it's the humanness of this person and what she had to go through. Because for instance, you don't need the government. You don't need the addiction to tell the government story. You know, this story, like I said, we just saw MLK versus the FBI, you know, the FBI fucks with every nigga, right? We could tell that story, but it's the addiction part, which is this human part of this story that is interesting about Billie Holiday and how it tells her particular story. And it's that dance. And it's something that you're very familiar with too, you know, and, and how it can attract the worst elements, you know, to you and just do all these other things. And that's what's fascinating to me about that. Even the same with Jimmy, I don't even know his story about with heroin, but you know, apparently he was doing it too. I don't know how long. I don't know if he became an addict or whatever, but that's also a fascinating scene. Like those to me are some of the standout scenes, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And the, when she takes him by the hand, and I think you're showing us it feels like we're on a trip, you know, you know, the whole great, it's a great sequence, you know, that ends in this very powerful image, and I'll let you guys see it. It's the most powerful image in the film, I think, which to me is so connected to the strange fruit of this, you know, which is a different story than the FBI thing, I guess I'm saying, which to me is the framework to tell that. But that's just my take on it.
I'm fascinated about your take.
Because what you do best, and this is what I'm giving you props, is you get to that heart of that human story, you know, and what we should really be caring about in there. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I don't know. You may be right. No, you may be right. I think that that's always in the back of my head in telling the story. And, you know, the story ultimately is about the government taking her down. But I think that the addiction was so strong that even after they came for her in jail, she was still, I couldn't even write everything I wanted. I couldn't even put in everything I wanted to put in. The dog was a traveler for the drugs. She had that dog trained to walk up and down Amsterdam and Harlem to get from the drug man into her house. Cause she had, that's how slick she was and had the dog trained to do drug runs.
How was Billie Holiday in your research? There's this, a section of it where you have, I forgot who it was. It may have been a black reporter, who's kind of negative on Billie when she had to go to prison.
Yeah.
Where was Billie at around that time in the black community? Was she kind of, where was she from your research? Do you know?
I mean, the same way they treated Whitney Houston, you know, the same way we treat some of the greats until they're gone you know, it's just, we are hardest on our own people. I love that line. Mm-hmm. You know, we are hardest on our own people because we expect perfection. We've been brainwashed by the white man that we need to be perfect. So that's an ongoing theme too in what it is that I try to say. And no, she was not beloved. She was not beloved. And that's all she wanted to, that's all, that was her main audience. That's who she really wanted to please. Mm-hmm. She really wanted to please us.
Yeah.
Just wanted to please us. And you know, us gave her our asses to kiss, which is really painful. That's painful, you know? I mean, not everybody, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, you know, she was asked to leave maybe because she was high too, the Apollo several times. She'd fuck him up and cuss him out and leave. Right. You know what I mean?
She wasn't
Ella Fitzgerald at all.
Not at all.
You know, what was brilliant about Billie though, was because she lived if you really study all of her songs and you listen to different versions of whatever song that you're listening to, it's never ever the same way. And mm-hmm. you always feel like you are going off the rails. You always feel like, is she going to get through this one right here? What, mm-hmm. what is this that she's doing? And she is, and that's genius. I think that is genius when she, that's what makes, cause she's living in the moment, Larry. She's in the, she's singing in the moment because she didn't believe that the next moment was going to come. This is a woman. And try to wrap your head around it. This is a woman that was literally born in a brothel, mm-hmm. that was a prostitute, mm-hmm. that was arrested for getting raped, that was drugging herself to heal herself. She did not think that she was going to make it. And she said Harry Ainsley was going to kill her. Oftentimes she said, Harry, they're going to kill me. They're going to kill me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she realized that she was going to make it. So when you see the work, when you listen to the work is in the moment. The songs are never the same. The tones are never the same. The mm-hmm. vocals are never the same because she is living in the moment, and because she didn't think the next moment was coming. And when you are, when she, that's why she fought the government. She wasn't, she didn't think of herself as a civil rights leader. She didn't think of herself. She was just like doing the right thing because she knew that there was no other way of doing it. And she had nothing to lose. That's the brilliance of Billie Holiday. She had nothing to lose mm-hmm. by being right present in the moment and telling the government, go fuck yourself.
What was your opinion while you were doing this about kind of like the black part of bringing black people down, you know, because you have the black FBI agents that are working on this. And, mm-hmm. you know, you have the character Jimmy, who seems to have a problem with this, but some of the other agents don't. You know, mm-hmm. this is another issue, you know, in the film that, you know, it, and it seems something that we're kind of wrestling with today. Our own people bring complicit in bringing our own people down.
That was a hard part for me mm-hmm. as a storyteller too. Right. That was one of the hardest things to do, was to keep Jimmy. How do you redeem yourself after?
Right.
How's our lead guy redeem himself after, which I think I achieved, which in the beginning, you know, what is your fear as a filmmaker? What is your set off? What are you setting off to do this? What do you want? Well, one was to make sure Billy was not a victim. And the second was to make sure that Jimmy wasn't a dick after he, how do we nuance that? Because he is a dick. So, through storytelling, we sort of feel, we understand. I don't know if you forgive him, but you understand him.
Well, he almost feels like the protagonist in a lot of this movie. You know, we're seeing a lot of it from his point of view.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. My dad was a cop. Mm-hmm. He was in the line. He was killed in the line of duty in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And he was 6'4". He was
You're really sorry.
He was killed. He was a boxer, so he didn't even need his gun. Mm. So he used to go out and beat niggas. He was like, put his gun down. My mother would always tell him, take your gun. The one time he didn't take his gun, he was killed. But needless to say, he sparred with Muhammad Ali. He was Muhammad Ali's bodyguard while in Philadelphia. Wow. Yeah. And so he was such a strong figure to me. Mm-hmm. I never saw him cry ever, except when he came home from MOVE and when Rizzo was in office and he did something that he took to his grave, to those MOVE kids. Mm-hmm. And he cried almost like he was having a nervous breakdown.
Wow.
And I don't know what it was, but I think it was something that he did. And so I think that when I think of Jimmy, and I think Jimmy had a job to do, mm-hmm. like my dad had a job to do, to put food on the table for us.
Right.
And I think that he struggled with that. And I think that Jimmy struggled with that too. I know that Jimmy struggled with that.
Yeah. It is complicated.
And that's what we say.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Yeah, you actually do.
And I love Billy for this. Billy was like, I was like, this is when I fell in love with Billy, because everybody with the Baltimore club, here come Jimmy, here come this nigga. And everybody said, what the fuck is he? What are you doing? What is he doing here? And Billy says, let him go. She had no judgment. She understood.
Yeah.
She understood that he was just doing a job.
Yeah. It seems that she dealt with people on their own terms a lot, you know, pretty straightforward. It's kind of interesting. What are your hopes for the movie in terms of exhibition? Do you think it would you like it to have a theatrical run if that's possible when all this is over and that type of thing?
I hope to. I don't know. I mean, you know, again, the question is who wants to see a film once it's streamed already?
Yeah.
I think. But then you have
in a different world
great,
now.
You have great cinephiles and people that really mm-hmm. appreciate cinema that for that. And, you know, overseas, I don't know how they're pulling it off, but you know, you can, in fact, Paris's theaters will be opened in a couple of months and that's where we're going to be there. And mm-hmm. in Germany and in Japan. So, you know, we can see it over there and, or, you know, I may very well just get some theaters here mm-hmm. so that people can see the film. I think, I don't know. We don't know. It's day by day, but I really do believe we're going to be in a good place. The movie is the movie. And I think it's, I stand by it. I'm thrilled with it. And it's great, you know, because I got people from Puffy being psychotic about it to Oprah being crazy about it.
It's great.
The different powers of Black people, you know, two different worlds of Black people that understand us and see us on screen. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
What's coming up next for you, Lee? Are you going to keep directing things or other projects you do? Or is there another lane that you're going to drop into for us?
Well, there's so much going on. I've got the television crazy stuff, that a lot of stuff I took when they canceled my shows, you know, after the Jussie Smollett incident. And I really do believe that they canceled that shit over there. I think that, you know,
really?
I don't know. That's my gut telling me, you know. Whatever it did, it let me free to go back to what it is that I know what to do with this film, which was that was a gift from God. Yeah. But I do miss television. I miss the impact that I can make on people on a weekly basis. So yeah. I'm doing a bunch of they're not my shows, but they're shows that I'm producing.
Sure.
I'm producing The Spook Who Sat by the Door. I'm thrilled about that for FX.
Great.
With a great Black Gerard McMurray, I'm in awe of his talent as a yes, he comes from the Ryan Coogler world, and it's just I'm in awe of working with him. And I'm doing Waiting to Exhale. I'm doing a bunch of television shows, but not my voice. So I'm trying to figure out what that thing is, maybe a procedural.
Right.
So a bunch of television shows that'll have my name on it, but I'm just producing it, giving voice to giving back to people that are more talented than me or just as talented as me.
Well, you could godfather them. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like giving back is really important.
Yeah.
And, and then just trying to, I think a procedural is what I'm going to focus on. What is a lead in? Miss Freddie, I think, you know, get Miss Freddie. I'm going to put her in a procedural where she's going to solve crimes every week. Her and a Republican voting Trumper, they'll be Cagney and Lacey, figure out.
That's great.
You know, that and.
Well, the cool thing about television, I feel television arguably is a better platform for different types of stories these days than film. Film is so hard to do, it feels like.
I know.
Where that used to be the place to do these different things, you know, but television's kind of replaced it in many ways, you know, because. You know, if you're not doing a big platform, you know, series and film, you know, or that type of thing, like it's a miracle that you've made this film, I think, you know, in that range. So I know it wasn't easy getting the money for it, you know, and that type of thing. But I hope you can still make these types of films.
I will retire because I don't know of another way to creatively. I don't know how to exist without it. I've been doing it for 30 years, so I don't really know how else but do and the types of movies, Larry, that I want to do, you know, they're very specific.
Are there some more stories that you personally that are
they are Rustin? I want to do that. I want to do that.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome. That'd be great.
I want to do Bayard. I want to do a horror movie, but a real like Exorcist horror where you niggas be running out the theater with their hair on fire. That kind of old school shit. You know what I'm talking about? I ain't been scared since Exorcist. Come on, you know it and I know it. We really ain't been scared since Exorcist.
I'm trying to think right now. I don't know.
No,
Exorcist was pretty scary. That was pretty scary.
Come on, man. If that's the bar I got to hit and if that's what, you know what I mean? And nothing is going to be better than a Black woman or a Black man fighting the devil. Nothing.
Wow. No, nothing. You're right about that. Oh, you guys heard it. Lee Daniels is going to be fighting the devil coming up. Lee, thanks so much for taking the time for being here out of your busy schedule. He's promoting the movie United States versus Billie Holiday. Guys, to me, it's a loving scrapbook of this person who has been misunderstood, who it's hard to categorize her. She's an American icon, not just a Black American icon. This woman, her music sounds as contemporary today as it did when she first sang it. And to hear this other story of, you know, what this country has done to people is thank you, Lee Daniels, for showing us that. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. I love you, Larry. I love being on your show.
Oh, man, we love having you, Lee.
Wait, but my bubbles and said, Larry's, I said, oh, shit, that's that smart nigga. I got to pull it together. No.
When Lee was on the nightly show, I think you wore pajamas on the show, if I recall.
I did. Well, yeah, man, I did that. Well, how long ago was
that? I never forgot that. That was like, oh God, 5-6 years ago.
I was drinking, Negro.
I was like, but it was fantastic. I'm like, this thing is wearing pajamas about you. How great is that? You know, but that was great. I always appreciated you being on it. Those were trying to launch that and everything. That was great. We had fun. Yeah.
So much fun.
All right. Take care, my friend.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon. God bless. Stay safe.
You too. Bye.